Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Back in the saddle, another Monday night upon us. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd here for On the Double. The temperature's still rising, the mercury very high. Sean Boyd, what's going on in Elk Grove, California?
Well, man, good afternoon and hello, everybody, from the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. Man, what a beautiful, beautiful time of the year, Sean Wally. Of course, this week, all 32 teams reporting to training camp for the NFL season. I'm so excited. Every year, there's always visions of grandeur for all 32 teams around the NFL. That's the chance for you to actually think about your team as a Super Bowl contender. All of the things, the transactions that they've done, the changes, new coaches, new systems, all of those things in place. And here in Northern California, of course, the San Francisco 49ers are looking to make things right with new head coach Jim Tomsula as his era begins. But what I'm excited about, Sean Wally, is the silver and black in the Raider Nation, man. I cannot begin to tell you the cool and awesome things that are going on at camp, but I will tell you that things are a lot sharper under Jack Del Rio. I will tell you that this year will be different. I know that that's something that all losing teams say year in and year out, but I reserved that right over the past couple of years. And this year, Sean Wally, I'm telling you that things will be different in the black hole.
And one, the mighty professor of ESPN fame, John Clayton, was recently in camp in Napa, California for covering the Raiders, and he took over the Raiders' Twitter.
Yeah, you know, and that's one thing. If you know John Clayton, of course, John Clayton being up from the Pacific Northwest and, you know, being working for the News Tribune and following the Seahawks, now working for ESPN in the NFL. And, man, he did. He took over the Twitter like nobody's business as far as seeing what the Oakland Raiders are about. And John Clayton is one to reserve his rights on saying good things about the Raiders. And let's face it, they haven't done what they should have over the past 11, 12 years. But, man, he took over and, you know, saying some cool things about the big wide receivers that they have. And things look a lot different. He's enamored with Amari Cooper, the stud sensation who hasn't even played a down in the NFL. But from the sounds of, you know, Hall of Famers like, meaning Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, and of course John Clayton saying some things, this guy is going to be special. And you pair him with a seasoned Derek Carr in his second year, oh my goodness, you know, it should be exciting for the Raider Nation to see some awesome football finally for a change.
And it was great for the Raider Nation to be able to interact with John Clayton and ask questions about their favorite team.
Yeah, you know, there it, you know, even though it's been, as I've mentioned, over 10 years since the Raiders have had some type of legitimacy, the Raider Nation is the Raider Nation. The fans are the fans. So they have never left. You know, through the good times and the bad, they are sticking with their team. And there's been a lot of bad. But now John Clayton gets the chance to talk, you know, amongst the faithful and get an idea on what's going on and what the pulse is. And you know, there is such an awesome vibe that I cannot wait. I can't wait for, you know, the first preseason game. I can't wait till the first game of the regular season, because I know that this team is going to surprise the AFC West, and this will start a new era in Oakland.
And it's great for the Raiders to have all of the guys that bring a good pedigree, a Jack Del Rio, a Ken Norton Jr. directing the defense. Now, there's a lot of guys that have done a lot of good things in the NFL on that coaching staff.
Yeah, you know, Sean, that's the thing. When Jack Del Rio came on board, he made sure that he solidified things. And let's not forget Bill Musgrave, who came over from the Philadelphia Eagles and as an offensive coordinator. And Bill Musgrave has a strong, strong pedigree as far as, you know, what he can do with different offensive styles. And of course, for those in the Pacific Northwest, if you don't know who Bill Musgrave is, of course, he played quarterback for the University of Oregon back in the day. And of course, he was one of the coaches for none other than one of our On the Double with the Double S Express correspondents in David Massey. And so, you know, Bill Musgrave brings, you know, added tutelage to this strong Oakland Raiders coaching staff. And let's not forget, Seattle Seahawks own Mike Tice is also on the staff, and he's looking to do some great things as well. So there is a strong, strong coaching staff in the Raider Nation. And I can tell you, Rod Woodson with the DBs, it goes on and on and on. There's a big, big buzz in Northern California. And for the first time in a long time, it's coming from the East Bay instead of over on the other side in San Francisco.
Well, Sean, here it's for show 114 of On the Double. A great show tonight with two excellent guests. Who are they? Set the table for us tonight.
Oh, tonight we have two awesome guests, as you were saying. Steve Kelly will be on the double, and we will be talking with him, of course, about all the great things going on in the Pacific Northwest. Steve Kelly, formerly with the Seattle Times, and now doing some independent stuff for himself. And so we have him for guest number one. Guest number two, we have the awesome Elise Woodward. Elise Woodward doing some things with the University of Washington, both with the basketball program and football. And so we'll get a chance to talk with both of those guests. And I look forward to an awesome, awesome show, Sean Wally.
Yeah, it's going to be great having Steve Kelly on for the first time. He's got over 30 years at the Seattle Times, so he will have a plethora of stories and knowledge to give out tonight.
You know, and that's what it's all about. You know, having such a long history, and, you know, if you've read some of Steve Kelly's articles, man, they're exciting and action-packed, and, you know, I look forward to talking with him about some of the current things that are going on up in the Pacific Northwest and actually all around in major sports.
Well, Sean, before Steve jumps on here in a couple of minutes, we had Seafair this weekend in Seattle Lake, Washington, and boy, it came down to the championship heat.
You know, we talked about Seafair over the past couple of weeks, and we had our special guest a couple of weeks ago, Jimmy Shane, in the Oh Boy Alberto. And, you know, the past couple of weeks, he's been doing some awesome things. He did some great things up there in your neck of the woods in the Tri-Cities. And then coming over to Seafair, he had a little bit of a run-in, it sounds like. But, I mean, man, sorry I missed Seafair weekend. You know, it sounds like 90-degree weather up there in the Pacific Northwest. It's always great weather during Seafair. But what happened with Jimmy Shane?
Man, the championship heat was great. Jimmy Shane and Graham Trucking Boat, so the Oh Boy Alberta boat and Graham Trucking were neck and neck, head to head, and they went into a turn together. Graham Trucking on the inside lane, lane one, lane two was Jimmy Shane and the Oh Boy Alberta, and they ended up bumping each other. And Jimmy Shane, at the end of the race, he actually pulled ahead the last few seconds to take the victory, or so we thought. And what happened was he got disqualified for not giving Graham Trucking the needed 10 feet space in the lane. And so Jimmy Shane thought he won, then had it the carpet pulled out from under him, and the Graham Trucking boat comes away the winner at Seafair.
So tell me this, Sean. It sounds like there's an instant replay in hydroplane racing. I mean, how did they figure out that Jimmy Shane was the one at fault? Obviously, they have the video cameras out there, but I didn't know that was a reviewable issue.
Oh, they've got, you know, just like any other sport, officials and the powers that be watching what's going on, and if there's a violation, they will assess penalties and lap penalties. And that's what they did. I believe they gave Jimmy Shane and the Oh Boy Alberto crew a lap penalty. So therefore, he ended up finishing back of the pack.
Wow. Well, it sounds like he had a great 2 weeks nonetheless. And even though it, you know, at that very end in the championship round, he winds up being disqualified, that boat goes fast, man. And how many miles per hour does he get up to? I think it, you know, those things get up to around 200 miles an hour.
Well, on the fast courses, that's what Jimmy explained to us a couple weeks ago here on the show. Jimmy Shane said that, you know, they're getting close to 200 on the Columbia River, but at Seafair on Lake Washington, it's a smaller course, much more technical. I believe the fastest lap was about 147 miles an hour, Sean.
And that is fast on the water, man. It's a whole different thing when you're going up against the little waves and the crests and everything. But, you know, I missed that one this past weekend. Of course, I've been engulfed with, as we talked at the beginning of the show, awesome things in NFL land. And so, you know, too bad that Jimmy Shane came up short on the short end of the stick, but sounds like it's still a great, great hydroplane season nonetheless.
Let's go ahead and head on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number one tonight. That is Steve Kelly. Steve, thanks for your time tonight.
Big time guest, really? Wow.
Hey, thanks for being on the show, Steve. And man, we will get right to it. Some cool things going on in the Pacific Northwest. Of course, training camp is upon us. Some big time contracts have been made. Russell Wilson, of course, being one of them. And then recently inked is Bobby Wagner. What is the sound and the effect going on up there in Seattle as far as keeping the team together, and, you know, will they continue to play strong football this year?
Well, yeah. And answer to the latter question, absolutely. You know, I've been in Seattle for more than 30 years. I've covered the Seahawks every year in that span. And I've never seen an organization, with the exception of the Patriots, that's as organized, that's as smart, that is ahead of the game, always looking to the next year. There was all this hand-wringing all summer in Seattle about Russell Wilson. Oh, my God, will he sign? Will he only play for $1.5 million? Why did he ever get in the movie Entourage? Right, you know, I mean, all kinds of serious issues about Russell Wilson. The one guy who wasn't concerned was John Schneider, the general manager. He knew it was going to get done. And I think everybody around this organization that's been watching them for the last 3 years knows that they're going to do the right things, and they're going to keep this team together. And I think the original thought was that they would put the franchise tag on Russell, and that would keep the team intact. But they found a way around the salary cap. So now they have Richard Sherman signed for the next 3 years, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, even though he's holding out right now. They've re-signed both their defensive ends, Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, linebacker K.J. Wright. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, the running back, is back. They've just done a magnificent job of keeping this team together. And, you know, coming from Seattle, where not much goes right in pro sports, I mean, it's freaky how good this team is and how good the organization is.
Now, of course, Steve, one of the things that Bobby Wagner mentioned before he signed his contract is that you can't keep everybody. He sent a tweet out and he said you can't keep everybody. Now, that type of a tone that was sent with Bobby Wagner, and of course, I'm sure he's singing a different tune now, but knowing what we know with Cam Chancellor and knowing that I believe Seattle did take a casualty, I believe, with their tackle or their defensive tackle, one of the defensive nose tackles.
Yeah, Tony McDaniel, who would have gotten, I think, $2.5 million this year, and who started 29 of the last 32 games, he's gone. And he is the one casualty right now.
And so with that being said, you know, is it still business as usual, or is there kind of – do you think that there will be, you know, maybe some players looking over their shoulders and, you know, and wanting to go for theirs just as Cam Chancellor and Bobby Wagner were doing?
Well, two different scenarios. First of all, Cam Chancellor signed for the next 3 years, so he already got his. In a matter of speaking,
right,
he already signed an extension. So he doesn't, and I love Cam. I think he's a great guy. He's an unbelievably great safety. But he really doesn't have a leg to stand on. Bobby Wagner, it was time to do him. It was time to get his deal done. So there are really two different scenarios. Now, you know, in the NFL, everybody looks over their shoulder because you're one misstep away from your career being over, your season being over. So everybody's always looking over their shoulder. And I think there's a lot of guys coming up next year. And I wouldn't say fringe guys, obviously, because Russell Okung, the left tackle, is certainly not a fringe guy. But guys who have been erratic, like Okung and Bruce Irvin, the linebacker, Brandon Mebane, defensive tackle, Jermaine Kearse. I mean, they have some guys who are on the team now who won't be next year. I think all those guys won't be.
Steve Kelly joining us here on the double. And Steve, you mentioned Cam Chancellor and that he's not in camp, losing $30,000 every day if the team holds him to that. What is your take professionally as a sports writer, but also personally on a guy that has 3 years remaining on his contract, already received a big payday for the second contract, yet he's trying to do what he can do to get more money?
Well, you know, personally, like I said, I like the guy a lot. He's a really good community guy. He's done a lot for this city. So from that standpoint, I like him. I don't get where he's coming from on this. I mean, yeah, he can look at where he's slotted among the best NFL safeties, and he might not like that, but that was his choice. He wanted the security of some guaranteed money and a long-term renegotiated contract. And you can't keep asking for more and more and more, especially with a team that's trying to keep all of its guys together. Let's face it, Cam Chancellor is better with Earl Thomas there. He's better with Richard Sherman there. So it's really, you know, I think he has to look at the big picture. He's, you know, he's doing very well, and they're going to win. You know, they're going to win a lot of games. And I think just to cause this little ripple is unnecessary, and I don't think it's going to get him in.
Now, Steve, with the addition of Jimmy Graham, is it safe to say that the Seahawks could be better than last season?
Well, I think it's very safe to say that. But having said that, that doesn't mean that they're going to get back to the Super Bowl, because their division, I think the Cardinals are going to be real good. Someday the Rams are going to be good. I mean, they've sort of been like the team that's going to break through for about the last 4 years, and instead they've broken down. But I think the division is stronger. The Packers are going to be nasty. And, you know, as good as the Seahawks were last year, remember, I think they were 4-4, and there were problems about whether the locker room was falling apart, and there were problems about whether Russell Wilson was the right leader for these guys. And then you go through the season, they righted the ship. But then in the NFC Championship game, they were done. And, you know, the most miraculous series of events got them back into the Super Bowl. I mean, it's hard to keep winning, to keep going back to the Super Bowl. I think since the era of free agency, which I think started in 1994, the only two teams that have repeated are the Patriots, the Denver Broncos in 98-99, and then the Patriots in 2004 and 2005. So it's tough. I don't care how good you are, it's tough to get back.
Yeah, Steve, and you're mentioning some valid points, and that's one of the things as, you know, Seahawks fans, it's great to say, hey, we're in the Super Bowl 2 years in a row, and, you know, we're one play away from winning it, because, you know, the glass is always half full. But some of those things that you're mentioning, one, you know, the Seattle started out 4-4, the locker room was bad. I believe Seattle won 9 out of the last 10, and Arizona was on their way to winning the NFC West, and if Carson Palmer doesn't go down, then Arizona wins that division easily. And I do believe with Carson Palmer back, Arizona is the team to beat in the NFC West. And you couple those, as you were saying, that, you know, Seattle was down and out against Green Bay. Also, things were aligned right as far as the Green Bay-Dallas game, that Dallas with that no catch call or whatever they had, you know, against the Cowboys. Dallas had a great chance of coming and playing against Seattle. And, of course, when Dallas came to Seattle earlier that year, they took care of business. So things have to go right, definitely, in order for them to get back.
And how much longer is it going to be before Marshawn Lynch breaks down? I mean, he can't keep taking the pounding he's been taking and put up the numbers that he does. I mean, and you know how running backs are. When you get up into your late 20s, early 30s, you go in a hurry. You go from being Pro Bowl to out of the league. And That's something you have to, if you're a Seahawks fan, you have to worry about with Marshawn. The other thing is, Russell Wilson took a bunch of hits last year. I mean, he got knocked around a lot more than he did in his first two seasons. How many hits can he take before it starts showing? So, Richard Sherman ended the year last year hurt. They're still kind of nursing Earl Thomas along through early parts of training camp. This is a league where two or three injuries can ruin a season. And I think the one thing you have to look at with the Seahawks and maybe be a little worried about is their depth. And in the past, they've had pretty good depth. I think in the process of keeping all their superstars, they're maybe going to lose a little bit of depth this year.
But I still see
they have
Seattle.
They have Jimmy Graham. That's a weapon they haven't had for the last 3 years.
Yeah, a strong tight end like Jimmy Graham, that is an added bonus for Seattle, and you couple him with Marshawn Lynch and, of course, Russell Wilson. There should be some great things going on. Now, Steve, I do want to kind of go off the Seahawks a little bit. There are some things going on in St. Louis to where St. Louis has with the Rams to where they have okayed to build the new stadium in St. Louis. And, of course, the people wanted a vote. The judge rules and says that, hey, we're not going to have a vote. We're just going to go ahead and build the stadium. Man, there's some crazy things going on in St. Louis with the possibility of moving to Los Angeles and everything. I mean, when do you see St. Louis actually, or possibly L.A. in the next couple of years, doing something great with the franchise?
Well, first of all, I hate that part of pro sports. I mean, we lost the Sonics in Seattle when, we supported them for 40 years, heart and soul, and just had them ripped from us. It was a combination of things, the league, the new owner, and the Seattle government kind of almost conspired to lose the Sonics. But with the NFL, this whole St. Louis thing is a travesty. They built this monstrosity of a dome in downtown St. Louis, and a part of the lease agreement was that the city had to keep that stadium as one of the top 10 stadiums in the country. And if it didn't, the Rams could get out of their lease. Well, when you build a stadium, you don't know what the next thing is going to be. You don't know what the next great stadium is going to look like. So all you have to go on is what's going on at the time. So to me, that the lease in the first place, putting that clause in the lease was ridiculous. And I don't know if you saw the HBO a couple weeks ago did a thing on stadiums, and they talked about things that the city of Cincinnati has to do to keep the Bengals. They have to give the Bengals everything that's dreamed up in the next 10 years has to go into that stadium, including the possibility of hologram replays, which hasn't even been invented yet. And if they don't, I don't even know what that looks like. Where do they put it? In the sky, on the field? I don't even know how that would work. But,
yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. That is, that's still one of the state-of-the-art stadiums. I mean, they have a great facility. The practice facility is right next to the actual stadium. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's a spectacular stadium. It's right downtown. And it's one of those things where it's not the fans. They don't go to the stadium and say, man, I can't wait till we get the hologram replay. It's the owners, and it's the owners conspiring to get more. And this whole St. Louis, San Diego, Oakland, all these teams fighting to get to LA first, that whole thing is just so distasteful. It's so insulting to sports fans and the people who pay and the people who, invest so much emotion in these teams. It's a travesty. And, these are all billionaires who just want more, and at the expense of the people who've supported them.
Steve Kelly joining us here on The Double. And, Steve, you brought it up briefly, the loss of the Sonics in 2008. Will we ever get an NBA team back? But also, do you have any faith in either of the Seattle arena possibilities, the Chris Hansen project or the newly talked about arena in Tukwila?
Well, I would say not in my lifetime, but probably in your lifetime. Such another team will come.
Oh, man.
Chris Chris Hansen, I think, I mean, he had the Sacramento Kings signed, sealed, and delivered here, and made a tragic flaw, tragic mistake that cost Seattle the Kings. But he's the kind of owner you want, and he's putting all of his money into the arena. He's buying up a bunch of property down in South Seattle, going to make it into kind of like an LA Live outside the Staples Center, that kind of a venue. But the Mariners are fighting him. Certain unions are fighting him. And a bunch of city council guys are scratching their heads saying, I don't know about this. And that's the problem. That's the thing that's frustrating people out here, is that you think you've got all your ducks in a row, and then another voice says, wait a minute. They always find ways, and this has been true of this city for as long as I've been here. They always find ways to say no instead of finding ways to say yes. And it's been so frustrating. I can't believe we have a football and baseball stadium here. Just there were so many people trying to find ways not to get either one of those buildings built.
As Seattle fans, we sure owe former Senator Slade Gorton a lot.
Well, he got us the baseball stadium, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, Paul Allen pretty much bought the election that got the football stadium. But, yeah, I mean, it's really frustrating. And a couple weeks ago, Jamal Crawford, who plays for the Clippers and is from Seattle, had an all-star game at Key Arena. I mean, it was there were guys who weren't much better than me playing in the game, so you couldn't call it an all-star game. But there were like 9,000 people there at Key Arena, and there was a buzz. And, I mean, this place is so hungry for NBA basketball. And it's a gold mine for the NBA if they would put their weight behind it. And I don't know why we got on the wrong side with the NBA, but we sure did.
Steve, in over 30 years at the Seattle Times, what are your favorite memories? What are your favorite teams, games, or players, coaches that you were able to cover and get to know?
Well, I could spend a couple hours on that. You know, favorite coaches, Mike Holmgren for sure with the Seahawks. He was the kind of guy. Well, I'll give you one story about Mike that'll kind of crystallize who he is. I was teaching at a believe it or not, the school district is so bad in Seattle that he had me teaching writing to elementary school kids, and it was in a low income area, and kids were getting into fights. And so I was at Seahawks headquarters one day, and Mike said, how you doing? I said, oh man, I just came from school, and fist fights were breaking out, and the kids weren't respecting me, and blah, blah, blah. And Mike said, you know, sounds like maybe I should go over there. And, you know, I said, yeah, anytime. And I figured that was the end of that. Next day, his secretary called and said, Mike has the following days open. Mike came down to our school. We had a big rocking chair. He sat in the rocking chair, two sections of fourth graders, just on the edge of their seats, and for an hour, he just talked to the kids. And we didn't have any problems the rest of the school year. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. George Carl with the Sonics, I love George. George is the kind of guy that would, you know, scream at you one day and take you out to lunch the next. And the thing I loved about him, I'm a high school basketball coach now, and George would talk about basketball as long as you wanted to listen. I love that about him. Lou Piniella, a great showman and a really, really good guy. You know, tough. He didn't. If you asked a bad question, he let you know right away. But terrific guy. And you know, I think for me, it was the associations as much as the games. But you know, watching Ken Griffey Jr. every day in his prime, Edgar Martinez double that beat the Yankees in the playoffs for the Mariners' first ever playoff victory in 95, watching that 2001 team win 116 games after 9/11, giving the city kind of something to rejoice about. Watching Steve Largent for however many years, and dealing with him, and you know, really classy guy. This is how sports have changed, I think. I don't think this would happen today. But Steve would call me up if I talked to him in the afternoon, and you know, he got pulled away. he would call me up later that night and say, hey, I'm sorry, I couldn't finish the interview. Is there anything else you need? I mean, who's going to do that now? So it's that kind of thing. It's being around all the great people that I've been around as much as it is having watched, you know, I watched Usain Bolt in China and watched him break the world record from the 100 and the 200. That's probably the greatest thrill I've ever had. But as great as that was, you know, just hanging out with Mike Holmgren or George Carl or Gary Payton or, you know, Lenny Wilkins, all those guys, that to me is what I cherish more than the actual events.
Steve Kelly, kind enough to join us here on The Double. And, of course, Steve, Sean Wally mentioning your 30 years with the Seattle Times and some of your fondest moments. Is there ever a time to where you just feel like maybe the evolution of sports is gone so drastic to where you just want to hang it all up?
Well, I did. I hung it all up.
Yeah.
I retired.
Yeah.
And you know what? And a lot of it was because of what you said. I mean, what you just said. I covered the NBA in both in Portland and Seattle. And when Dr. J came to town, I went up to his room and we sat and talked. Michael Jordan's early years before a game, you get there early enough, Michael would talk to you, just you, for 20 minutes. Magic Johnson, talk to you forever. Magic and I are still, hey, Steve, hey, Magic, believe it or not. I don't even know why he would acknowledge me, but he does. You know, all those guys, Larry Bird, you could get to know them. Now, can you imagine, I mean, even the guys who cover LeBron on a daily basis, they don't get any time with LeBron. They don't really know who he is. They don't get him to, you know, maybe talk about what else is going on with the team that's not being reported, or maybe correct you on something that you reported that wasn't exactly right. That used to happen all the time in sports. Like I said, with Steve Largent calling me up, my goodness, I mean, can you imagine Richard Sherman calling somebody in that? Well, actually, I could imagine Richard Sherman calling everybody for that matter. But you know, not many guys now. It's almost like everybody has a prescribed time. Like Richard will talk on Thursdays. Russell Wilson talks on Tuesdays. Everybody has a prescribed time, and that's it. That's the only time you get with those guys. And I got really, really tired of that, especially, you know, since I was there for sort of the glory days of sports journalism. I didn't want to deal with what it's become.
Steve Kelly, we appreciate your time tonight. We've kept you on a little bit longer than normal. We could talk to you for hours, but one more thing I have for you. A little birdie told me our next guest has let me know that you're an awesome dancer. Is that true?
I was in my 20s. I don't know if I am in my 60s. It's more like that.
I was told all I had to do was ask you, and you would agree, from Miss Elise Woodward, by the way.
Oh, my God. Well, she's right. Then she's right. Yeah, I am a great dancer. I've actually danced on her show before. And that's where my dancing is best, on radio, by the way. I'm a really good radio dancer.
Hey, touche. That's the same is true here. The same is true here, for sure.
Well, it's my best.
We will. Steve Kelly, thank you so much for your time, and hopefully I'll see you again this fall at CenturyLink Field. We appreciate your time tonight.
That sounds good. Steve. Thanks a lot.
Steve Kelly, longtime columnist at the Seattle Times. Man, he's been around the block in Seattle, and not even that, around the world, covering the Olympics as well.
You know, it's so good to have Steve on the show. And, you know, talking with Steve reminds me of, you know, one of our other guests from the Seattle Times, Seattle PI, and Art Thiel. And, you know, these guys have a lot of knowledge, a lot of information to share. And, you know, it was interesting to get Steve's take on, you know, what caused him to retire, which was, you know, I mean, gosh, the way things go these days, you know, you have to schedule, you know, whatever for a cup of coffee with these guys. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have guest number two, none other than Elise Woodward. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on The Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the brush flame.
Yeah. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in guest number two tonight, Elise Woodward. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, clearly, if you had Steve Kelly on earlier, you're saving the best for last because, you know, that Steve Kelly guy being a Philly guy, you can't trust him as far as you can throw him. So I'm glad to help you guys out.
Well, Elise, Steve did send his regards, so take that with whatever grain of salt
you want. Oh, no. Steve Kelly is one of my absolute favorites. I love him. He actually was a regular on my talk show for years, so I'm just giving him hopefully he's listening and he heard me give him a shot. He deserves it.
Well, you know, I know that he would love to have the next dance with you. That, of course, that's what you were saying. He's quite a dancer there.
he claims to be an excellent dancer of the stomp, which is an old dance from Philadelphia. That's what he told me. I don't know if he's doing the nay nay.
Oh, see,
like
that's what I was going to ask. I thought it was the nay nay. I would have loved to have seen him do that.
You know what? I bet you Steve would do the nay-nay. I bet he could. I think he'd be all right. You'll have to ask him next time to send you a little video.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
he can groove.
And so, before we came on, we were talking a little bit about the Mariners. We're looking for a glimmer of hope for the Seattle Mariners. And, of course, time is running out. And, of course, when Felix is on the mound, there's a great, great chance. And you're saying the Mariners are up 7-4 right now over the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, you know, obviously, every time Felix goes the hill, you expect good things to happen. The glimmer of hope, I mean, to be honest, this year was supposed to be much more than about looking to the future. They're 10 games under 500, and it's depressing. I mean, it really is. They haven't been to the playoffs now in well over a decade. It's just, with that ballpark and the beautiful city and everything else, there's no reason they should not have made the playoffs and made some pretty deep stretches. It's embarrassing to the city, to be honest. And, you know, glimmer of hope right now, I mean, it's that you have Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and Felix Hernandez on your roster. And then, you know, their window is not, it's closing on those guys. They're, you know, they're all over 30. And, you know, they have got to surround those guys with productive players before it's too late.
Now, at least you mentioned Robbie Cano, and, you know, of course he's a gold glover and, you know, he's always going to play great defense. What do you think is the problem with him on offense, batting 261 this year? And I mean, nobody knows.
Well,
I mean,
you know, he came out that he was having all kinds of stomach issues, which is kind of what, you know, happened to Franklin Gutierrez years ago. But he's hit a lot better in the second half of the season post All-Star break. He's looked like Robinson Cano. He's been red hot. And he's looked like the Robinson Cano that you would expect. Earlier in the season, I think the most perplexing thing wasn't that he, you know, you go through slumps and ups and downs as a hitter. Certainly he hasn't had very many downs in his career. But it was the mental mistakes from him that were, you know, the base running errors and, you know, just uncharacteristic errors, where this guy is a great hitter, but he's an even better defender. I mean, he is a lights out gold glove second baseman that never seemingly makes a mistake. And it was bad, but why did he have those mental mistakes? Why was he struggling so bad at the plate? Was it because he was battling, you know, some stomach issues? Whatever it is, it seems like he's pulled out of that, which is the good news. You know, the bad news is that the Mariners are in a big-time hole, 10 games under, and it's, in my opinion, you know, late in the game to try to have any, you know, this season is, they're playing out the string as we turn the calendar to August, which is the, you know, that's the unfortunate part.
Now, at least if things stay status quo for the Mariners, and that means another year with no playoffs, do you pull the plug on Jack Z and his reign as GM?
You know, I personally really like Jack Cerenzik, and he was given the contract extension last year. But I just think for this franchise, if Jack was given a really difficult situation when he arrived, and that time is now over. I mean, they've had chances now the last couple of years to make a run, and last year they were close. They had to build off that this year, and they didn't. I don't think anybody would question if this team not only, and I love Lloyd McClendon. I really like Lloyd McClendon. I think he's fiery. I think the players respect him. But if you don't get results as a professional, it is your job to get results. I think for a lot of fans, they will want a fresh start, a clean slate. But if it's me and I'm the one making that decision of who stays and who goes, it's Howard Lincoln who needs to go first. Howard Lincoln has been at the top of every general manager change and every manager change. We've gone through this merry-go-round how many years in a row? And it just hasn't mattered who has been in those positions for so long. This team has gone, this organization's gone to the playoffs a total of 4 times in their history. That's just, and this guy still has his job at the top. It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I'd start with Howard Lincoln. If Howard Lincoln doesn't go, frankly, I don't really care what they do beneath them.
You've been around the Seattle sports scene the majority of your life. Do you have any idea, do you have any clue on the pulse of why Howard Lincoln continues to be in charge in Seattle for the Mariners?
Well, I think the interesting thing was when the Mariners were owned by Yamauchi, the Japanese owner, who never saw a Mariner game in person, he bought the team basically as a kind gesture to the city of Seattle and kept them from moving to Tampa. And when he did that, everybody, he should have been celebrated and revered, but he wasn't going to run the organization. He basically put Howard Lincoln in place, and Howard Lincoln took that job and has never looked back. He's almost as if he's an owner. Now, when Yamauchi passed, I thought maybe at that point we would see a tighter rein at the top of the organization, and we haven't yet. It hasn't been that long, but he has kept that job because he essentially was at the top he was not going to be displaced or fired. Now, with Yamauchi passing, I don't really know if we've had a long enough, you know, sample size of how this, you know, the change in direction of the organization, if they'll allow him to just sit at that perch as long as he wants it. He's also getting up there in age. I just can't think that this Mariner fan base is alarmingly loyal for what they've been given to cheer for in their franchise history. But I think there's so many fans that are just fed up. And sometimes you have to make changes, even though they're very difficult, with people that have dedicated a lot of their life to the organization. It's just you cannot allow this kind of, it's not even mediocrity, just bad baseball. You just can't allow it.
Elise Woodward joining us here on the Double, and you're absolutely right, Elise. The Mariner faithful have been so loyal, and they want a great product so bad. That's why it was so easy this year for us all to buy into the fact that they were supposed to go to the World Series. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I believe that the pieces were put in place, and then when you look at everything, and then, you know, when the first pitch is thrown out, you look at where the Mariners are, it is. It's a travesty to the city of the Seattle and the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, that's so funny. You say going to the World Series, which kind of makes me chuckle, because I think they got to make the playoffs first. Like, I think,
yes.
You know, this organization's never been to the World Series. That would be, I mean, so shocking to Mariner fans to see them make that run. But, I mean, I've got kids that have never seen playoff baseball in Seattle, and they are huge baseball fans. It's their favorite sport. They're diehard. They've never seen their hometown team in the playoffs. It's just, you know, that, and for me personally, I completely admire Felix Hernandez, the way that he handles himself, the way that he's been loyal to this franchise, to this city, the way that he's conducted himself, how funny he is to watch pitch. I mean, you know, I went out to the ballpark specifically to see Felix at his last start. I love watching this guy play. I think he's one of the best pitchers that we've seen over the last 10 years in baseball, and certainly one of the best in Mariner franchise history. And this guy's never touched the playoffs. And it breaks my heart, because I can't imagine what Felix would be like given that opportunity. I mean, don't you all just yearn for the chance to see him step to the mound game one of the playoffs at Safeco Field and have the entire stadium with yellow cards and King's Court and just that kind of atmosphere? Like, I imagine that. I think about it, and it's just so sad for him. Like, that they can't get it done for him. And it'll drive me nuts if they can't get to the playoffs with him in a Mariner uniform.
And Elise, you know, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and you are what we call the true fan. There's the fan that, you know, to save your heart, to save yourself from a lot of misery, you root for the name on the front of the jersey more so than the name on the back. And when you're talking about wanting it more for Felix, and I get it, you know, because Felix is one of the great guys, and we can get into what's going on and, you know, over in Renton, and how these guys are entirely different all of a sudden from what Felix Hernandez is. But yeah, you do. You really root for the individual player, and you want that. You want that person to succeed because of the things that he or she does right. And it's only fitting. And it should be that way.
Yeah. I mean, what has Felix done for this city other than dominate and continue to stay here despite the fact that the organization is not very well run? All he's ever said is how much he loves the city, loves the fan base. He's never held out. He's never done it. He just shows up, pitches his tail off, and makes this city proud. And, you know, for that, you know, I've had so much fun watching him throughout his career. I mean, with my kids, with my friends, with my family, with my husband. I mean, we have a blast watching this guy, and he's given us so much to enjoy. And I wish it's one of those things. I just wish the organization can get it together before his career's over. He's got a lot of innings on that arm, and you never know when the wheels will come off. You just never know. It could be tomorrow. It could be in 5 years. It could be in 10. We just don't know. You know, Jamie Moyer is going to be honored this weekend, and he pitched till he was 50, for God's sakes. But, you know, for Felix, it's just, you just never take for granted how special he's been for this city. And, you know, I just wish that we could, he won't be up there with the greats of Griffey and of Peyton and of, to me, and Russell Wilson and those guys, because he hasn't seen the postseason, and through no fault of his own. It's just, when you win in the postseason, you take that next step. And he can't take that next step with what the organization has done surrounding him. And like I said, through no fault of his own, he hasn't been able to reach the very tippy top as he should.
Elise, have you been able to put your finger on what the problem and main issue has been this year for the Mariners? If all the national prognosticators and even the local guys, and you look at this roster, and everybody's saying it should be a 85, 90, 95 win team, yet it seems like the opposite's happening.
Well, I think the Cano struggles in the first half of the season really set the offense back. And then the bullpen has just been a disaster. And last year, the bullpen was, I think, one of, if not the strengths of the team. And all of a sudden, you've got guys that you've never heard of coming in and being asked to play significant innings. Fernando Rodney, we all knew, was a guy that got results, but every single time out, it was sketchy. And, you know, he lost his job. He's no longer the closer because, as I don't think was unexpected, the wheels came off for him. He's a guy that always just was right on the edge and would, you know, put a couple of guys on, or with a three-run cushion, give up two runs, but get the save anyway. But the bullpen as a whole just has been nowhere near as effective as it was last year, and it's been a huge reason why this team has struggled. I think the addition of Nelson Cruz has been awesome. It's been fun to watch that guy play, and the offense can't be Nelson Cruz alone. I don't think Kyle Seager has been as consistent as we would have hoped for. I don't think Brad Miller has been as consistent as you would hope for. Zanino, you know, he just has looked inept at times at the plate, as good as he is, as, you know, defensively. And it seems with this team, when the pitching puts together a pretty good outing, the combination of the starters and the bullpen, the offense only puts up two runs or they get shut out. And it seems as if they've alternated this year, being everybody having a finger to be pointed at, whereas last year it was pretty much the offense was the problem the whole year. The starters were pretty consistent. The bullpen was pretty consistent. It was the offense just was terrible. And this year it's been kind of alternating problems that they've had to try to fix.
Elise, one of the other teams struggling this year in Seattle is the WNBA Storm, and you are the color analyst for their broadcast. And it's been a bit of a struggle for the Storm, although a bright spot, Sue Bird still going strong, 5,000 points total the other night in the WNBA.
Yeah, you know, and the good news is their number one overall draft pick, Jewel Lloyd, was just named the WNBA Rookie of the Month. You look at this team on paper before the season started, and they were picked to finish last in the conference, the Western Conference, and they've actually had some really tight games. They've been competitive. I love their head coach. I think she's phenomenal. She had many opportunities to, you know, get probably more security in the college game or, you know, do other things, but she is so committed to the WNBA, and she stuck around as an assistant coach for years here in Seattle after having a head job down in Sacramento, I think, 8 years ago. She's so dedicated. She's brilliant X's and O's. I think they have a very solid foundation to move forward with, but they're in a transition. They were really old last year. They let some of those players go, and now they're really young. But I think this team, they've got two rookies that have been super impressive, not only Jewel Lloyd out of Notre Dame, but Ramu Tokushiki from Japan. She's 6'3". She dunks easily in practice. The first time I saw her, I was like, what? She just dunked easy, like in the middle of a scrimmage situation, just went up and dunked. So they've got some pieces that will grow, but they're not there yet. They're just learning on the fly and, you know, trying to soak up as much of the leadership and knowledge from Sue Bird in her last couple of years playing in the WNBA.
Now, at least, of course, with the Seattle Storm, they had some great years a few years ago, and now you're mentioning they are very lean. For the WNBA as a whole, what is it going to take to actually keep that interest level, that fan base alive, to where the country loves basketball all year round?
Well, I think one of the big challenges this summer has been Diana Taurasi sat the year out. She plays with Phoenix. They won the entire championship last year. But she gets paid, I think, $1.5 million per year to play in Russia. And the Russian team, she only gets $100,000 to play in the WNBA. They just don't make a lot of money. And so some of the big-time stars, are, you know, Candace Parker, who played at Tennessee and is a phenomenal athlete, one of the best players. She just started playing this season of WNBA last week. She just took some time off to heal her body up, because it's not like the NBA where these players are paid enough money. They're essentially like the old days in the NBA where they moonlight. And for many of these WNBA players, they moonlight in Europe, and they play a lot of basketball over in Europe. I think the league is in very strong, solid foundation, and it's just like anything, it takes time to grow a brand. For the first 10 years of the WNBA, and probably still to this day, your average fan needs to just learn the mascots and needs to learn the nicknames and needs to know where these teams are. I mean,
right.
There's no history. I say, you know, people say, why are Red Sox fans and Yankee fans so passionate compared to, you know, even Angels fans? Or because your grandpa isn't telling you about the good old days, or your parents. So the WNBA has survived the really difficult parts and the transition into being individually owned and operated and not reliant upon the NBA. And so they're in that transition, and I think they're in solid ground. But like anything, it's a slow build. And I think they have some stars that with big names, and every big name that comes out and joins the WNBA will help.
Great insight. I love that. Yeah. You know, just a little bit more, you know, wherewithal on what the sport is. And it's definitely going to flourish. Now, Elise, I do want to switch gears, because I'm down here in Northern California, and you are my eyes and ears when it comes to what's going on Mount Lake and the University of Washington. Football season is upon us, and September the 4th is a big game for Chris Peterson. He's heading over to his old stomping grounds at Boise. So how are things going? I know you do the sideline reporting for the Huskies. How are the Huskies looking going into this season?
Well, you know, they haven't started fall camp yet. They've got the big official press conference on Friday, and then they start underway with practices on Saturday. And there's two major topics that everybody's going to be talking about before that opener on September 4th, and that is Chris Peterson, who, and we all remember what kind of success he had at Boise State, will head back to the team that he had such success with in game one. And for Washington, the players, the fans, it's just, hey, you got to go on the road and win a game. But for Chris Peterson and for Boise State and its players, he recruited most of those players. Almost his entire coaching staff came with him from Boise State. So all of the Bronco players will want to have, you know, they're going to want to show Chris Peterson that he was wrong to leave. They're going to be up for that game. They're going to be motivated. It's going to be intense. And they play so well on the blue turf. It's game one of the season. It's just going to be so intense. I heard the ticket demand in Boise has been out of the roof for months, trying to get a hold of tickets for that game to come and probably boo Chris Peterson. I would imagine maybe they'll cheer. I don't know what the reaction will be. I'm curious.
Yeah.
But that's number one. And then number two is the UW quarterback situation. Siler Miles retired from football due to health concerns. He had some bad hips. He had surgery in high school, thought it was better, and then he had those issues pop up again during last season. And I think he probably lost some of his love for the game, too. And He's no longer playing, so now they have to find a quarterback, and they have a really talented true freshman that was here this spring in Jake Browning, who set all kinds of records down in California where you're at, but he's not ready, in my opinion. He's just not ready. You can't just walk in as a true freshman into a D1 Pac-12 program and think you're going to start at quarterback. It's just there are very, very few of them that can do that. And then they've got KJ Carter-Samuels, who is a redshirt freshman who has shown big arms, some talent, but he has never taken a collegiate snap. And then they have a guy that is a junior that has taken a snap, started the game last year, and Jeff Lindquist, who I thought looked better than everybody in spring ball. Big arm, would come in actually for a couple of series of game last year, quarterback keepers. He's big and strong. He weighs almost 250 as a quarterback, but he moves pretty well. And he's the veteran, very smart kid. And right now it's a wide open competition. So we'll see. That's definitely on the field. The number one priority is finding a guy that can lead the team.
And yeah, at least, you know, me getting a chance to see Jake Browning firsthand from Folsom High School out here, the kid is, he's a savvy quarterback, but as you're saying, I just don't think that he's ready. It's tough for a freshman to come in and actually take the reins of a huge program like the University of Washington has. And, you know, but with the young quarterbacks that they have, is this a rebuilding era for Chris Peterson?
I don't think there's any question that this season they had some really top-level talent last year, especially defensively. You know, you lose top 10 talent, Danny Shelton, you know, to the NFL, you lose Shaq Thompson, first-round talent, you lose Marcus Peters, first-round talent, you lose the leading sack master in all of football last year in Hauli Kakaha, one of my favorite all-time Huskies. That's four big-time guys that you started the year with last year and you won't have this year. Obviously, Marcus Peters was kicked off the team, but three big-time studs and leaders for your program. And then they also lost their, you know, their entire defensive line. They were all four starters last year. And they have some guys that I think are good players that were there for depth and got, like, Elijah Qualls as a kid that got a lot of reps last year, but they're really green in their front seven, really green. And Travis Feeney will have to come in and stay healthy and play really well at linebacker. Corey Littleton is going to have to come in and play really well at linebacker. And they're just going to be really young on defense. And then offensively, they don't have a quarterback that's proven anything. Last year's MVP on offense, Dwayne Washington, only had, like, I think 500-plus yards rushing the football, 9 touchdowns, had 3 games of 100 yards or more. But he's not a finished product. He's a talented guy that started his career as a wide receiver, but he's going to be asked to carry the load. And we'll see if he can do it. There's a lot of question marks for this team. They're pegged in Vegas to win, I think, four and a half games this year. So, you know, this is a year that Chris Peterson he's going to have to get creative, and he's going to have these kids grow up really quickly, and they're going to have to outperform predictions for them to get to a bowl game.
Elise Woodward joining us here on The Double. And Elise, you are, as mentioned, the sideline reporter for UW football on the radio, as well as the analyst for women's basketball at UW, and of course, over for the WNBA Storm. What are some keys that you take into every game for both positions, the sideline reporter and also the color analyst for basketball?
Some keys? That's a good question. You know, honestly, I absolutely love doing live games. I love it. And my big thing is I'm so grateful to be down there with that intensity, with the passion, with anything can happen. I think, for me, the fun of it, the joy of it, getting that opportunity, I never take it for granted. And it's just like, let's go. I always want to be overly prepared and then just go out and have fun. And never forget it's a game and that people have put in immense amount of time, energy, and effort, the players, the coaches, the fans. And it's a huge deal to people, not only to the coaches, but to the fans. And they want every single bit of information that you can provide and to do so without errors. And so that's what I try to do, is just make sure that, you know, I am as serious and prepared for my job as the coach is, player is, and you know, go out there and have fun. I mean, because it's a blast. And, you know, it's so much fun. I mean, the coolest thing for doing the sideline for football is standing. I always stand right next to the tunnel for home games. And just for these kids, they get this little tiny window where they get to run out in front of 72,000 people screaming for them. And they put so much time and effort and energy into 6 or 7 home games a year, 12 games total. I mean, you're talking about really 36 hours of being on the field. And if you only play offense or defense or whatever, you're really looking at like 18 hours. You dedicate your whole life for 18 hours of field time. And I love the passion and the intensity that goes into those guys preparing. And so, you know, for me, the job, it's just, I just try to provide as much information and passion as I can to those fans that are just as into it as the coaches and the players.
And I'm sure it feels like it does for Sean and I when we have a chance to call games, that it never feels like work, at least in our case. I'm sure you feel the same.
Oh, yeah. I it doesn't feel like work at all. And I always try to do it in perspective of an athlete. Of, you know, I think fans sometimes only think of athletes on game day. They don't realize everything they did to step on the field that day. And so the emotion and the physical toll and the sacrifices that every single one of those athletes went through to get that chance to suit up, I never try to forget that when I approach a broadcast. And, you know, just to remember that they've dedicated their life to stepping on that field that day, no matter if it's sixth grade kids or in the Super Bowl, it's their life. I mean, you know, the former coach of PLU said, hey, make the big time where you're at. And every one of those athletes feels the same way. And so, you know, you want to give them the proper dedication to your craft, to giving a good broadcast so that they, you know, that all their work and everything, that you're actually giving the right information and that you're saying their name correctly and, the, you know, all those kind of little things that are a big deal to those athletes.
Elise Woodward, we've had you on for half an hour. We appreciate you hanging on with us. And we haven't even talked the NFC champion, so we'll have to get you back on in the next couple of months and talk a little NFL football. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Super Thanks, Bowl, Elise. That's Super Bowl. That's what's happening. That's all you need to know, guys.
Hey, that's a great ending. I love it. Thank you so much, Elise. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, no problem, guys. Anytime. Talk to you later.
There goes Elise Woodward. You can follow her on Twitter at Elise M. Woodward.
You know, Elise has so much knowledge as far as sports is concerned. And the last time she was on the double, it wasn't at a, gosh, I'd say, wasn't really a fond time. It was a great time for her on the show, but of course, leaving KJR. And, you know, the thing with Elise is that she hasn't reinvented herself as much as she just keeps going, man. And that's awesome. That's what we have to do as media. You know, that's what we have to do as broadcasters. That's what we have to do as play-by-play color analysts. And, you know, you just keep going. And Elise has found a way. As you had mentioned, Sean, she's a color analyst with the Storm, working a little bit with Como and doing some things, you know, color analyst with the UW women's basketball and sideline reporting. That's a full slate, Sean Wally.
Yeah, and definitely business will be picking up for her as football kicks into high gear here in the next few weeks. And I really like how she said, be prepared, be over-prepared, but also have fun. Because at the end of the day, it is a game.
Yeah, you know, and Elisa, she's speaking along the lines of being an athlete, because that's what she was. She's an athlete first. And then when you take that regiment, that repetition constantly, and then you put it into another profession such as broadcasting, yeah, that's what you do. You prepare and you always have to keep yourself ready, and she does just that.
Man, Sean, we could talk to both of our guests tonight for hours, and we kept both of them longer than normal, and heck, we didn't even hit on everything, so we'll definitely have to have Steve Kelly and Elise Woodward on again soon on an upcoming On the Double and pick their brains about more stories, more things they've learn behind the scenes and what's going on also currently.
Yeah, you know, and you know, there's always some great things that are going on. Of course, we touch a lot on the Pacific Northwest and all things going on up there. And we're going to dip a little bit more into Northern California. I know some of our listeners down here get a couple of grunts every now and again, and I try to squeak in an A's or a Raiders type of thing. You know, I'll do better in getting across the bay. Those times are coming. But but yeah, man, we're definitely going to keep it rolling and plugging along.
Well, Sean and I do have to say one thing. It is Mom's birthday week, so this is the show of her birthday. So happy birthday to my mom, Kathy, in Lacey, Washington. Big birthday coming up in a couple days.
Happy birthday, Mom Wally, and I'm definitely going to be giving you a call. And so I know that you're going to enjoy yourself. And you know, I love you, and continued health, long health for many years.
Man, Sean, hopefully you're beating the heat down there in the 916. And, whew, you know, the temperature has finally turned down on the thermostat a little bit in the Pacific Northwest, right around 80 today, so much more comfortable than over the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's cooled down quite a bit on the West Coast. It wasn't that hot up here, down here, either. I think it was about 88 degrees, but, you know, still warm and, you know, and other, you know, compared to other parts of the country. But we need some water, Sean. We need water in a major way. And so, you know, we're going to be crossing our fingers for that.
No doubt. No doubt. You know, there's drought all up and down the West Coast, and you can't really get any rain. If you do, it's a sprinkle or two, and it does nothing to help with the water levels, the lake river levels. So, and all the fires. I mean, a lot of Washington is under smoke and heavy smog because of that. So,
yeah, crazy, crazy, crazy stuff going on when it comes to weather. Now, of course, Sean, you had the chance to be on the East Coast instead of away from this dry, dusty climate on the West. You were over in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So what was going on over there?
Oh, goodness. It was 6 days in hot, very, very humid weather, which I would take the West Coast weather any day over the humidity and mugginess I had in New Jersey. Yeah, stayed in Atlantic City for the with the Harlem Globetrotters, and we had games in Wildwood, New Jersey, 4 games Wednesday through Saturday, and it was a good time. You know, the Wildwood Convention Center is right on the Atlantic Ocean. Seriously, you walk out of the building and there's sand, and a few more yards beyond the sand is the Atlantic Ocean. So that was very, very cool, being on the Wildwood Jersey Shore Boardwalk, and you know, they had amusement parks on piers and just a really neat area to be in. But goodness, that humidity is insane.
Now, Sean, you had a chance to go on that roller coaster right off the boardwalk, the pier?
I absolutely did. That was a great time.
Now, I believe that's the same roller coaster. I know that they probably rebuilt it. It's a wood structure. But I believe that's the same roller coaster that was damaged in the hurricane that rolled through there a few years back.
I'm glad you told me that after I was done riding that roller coaster, because had I known that beforehand, maybe I would not have gone on it.
Oh, man. So what a spectacle it is. I mean, it's out there. It seems like it's in the middle of the sand. And then, I mean, it's brushing right up against the Atlantic Ocean. But, yeah, I believe that is the one that had lots of structural damage there in Atlantic City. But I'm glad that you survived it.
Yeah, it's really cool having an amusement park and a water park there on piers in Wildwood, New Jersey. And yeah, I have no doubt that the hurricane a few years ago probably did do damage to a lot of things on that beachfront. But it was a great time. We had a lot of cool fans out there in Wildwood, and you know, had a chance to work with and meet the great Sweet Lou Dunbar of Globetrotter fame. He was the head coach for the Harlem Globetrotters, and he's just a hilarious, awesome individual.
Awesome stuff. Always good to get a chance to meet with the Globetrotter legends. I know the last, I believe one of the last legends you had a picture with was with Curly Neal. And so those are awesome, awesome people that you can talk to, legends of basketball.
Yeah, it's been great to meet these guys, and they're super nice and just funny, funny guys. And, you know, they've seen it all over the world. And you know, a lot of these guys that were made famous on Scooby-Doo, and here they are in person. So it's totally a blast.
So a recap of the show, man. This is show number 114, Sean Wally. Give our listeners a rundown on who our guests were today.
That's right, Sean. For show 114, we had Steve Kelly, long time, over 3 decades at the Seattle Times as a sports columnist, and he had so much insight, so many stories. And second guest, big time guest number 2, Elise Woodward, joining us for the second time. She's doing so many things, it's hard to keep up with her, from Seattle Storm analyst duties to analyst for the UW women's basketball team and sideline reporter for Husky football on the radio. And she had a lot of things to say about the state of the Seattle Mariners. We had the Hydros at Seafair in Seattle. A lot going on. Training camps starting all over the NFL, including Napa, California for the Raiders and Renton, Washington for the Seattle Seahawks, Sean Boyd.
And again, man, I am so excited for the NFL season, and I cannot wait for it to get started here in a couple of weeks. Show number 114 in the books here on the Double S Express. Because it's football season, you're not in the game unless you make a play. And when you make that big play, we hope that you hit nothing but pay dirt in the end zone. Show number 114. This is a DSX LLC production. For Sean Wally in the Pacific Northwest, Don Newsom, our engineer in Paradise, California, and yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.